Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 200-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by WordPress. WordPress salutes all the small businesses out there making a big difference. Create your small business website and get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/allaboutandroid. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code AAA to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. Hello, and welcome to another episode of All About Android. This is episode 305, recorded on Tuesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, 2017. We're your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
I'm Florence Ion.
I love you guys.
Yay!
Nice too.
Happy Valentine's Day.
I noticed, Flo, you actually were festive. You were wearing
red. Yeah, we're red. Well, I was going to wear actually a heart shirt, but I just wasn't feeling it today, to be honest.
Okay.
And that's a little on the nose, too. I like the subtle red as opposed to just hearts, you know.
So. However, if you had a heart on your sleeve, that would be kind of cool.
I mean, that would be.
You wear your heart on your sleeve.
Well, that's my life story. Right?
If we know something about Florence. See, I look at your name and I call you Florence. I don't ever call you Florence unless I'm looking at your name. I don't know what that means about me.
We should change the lower third to say Flo. Just Flo.
Should we change the lower third to say Flo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool I changed my laptop.
Oh, what do you got?
Chromebook.
Asus.
Cool. Look.
Oh my goodness, you're breaking its back. We're going to talk all about that. We're going to dive into that for sure a little bit later because I want to hear your thoughts on that. But hey, why don't we bring in our guest today?
Yes.
Super psyched to welcome back Liam Spradlin from TouchLab.co. How's it going, Liam?
It's going well.
Awesome. It's great to have you back. Ron was mentioning a couple of weeks ago that he ran into you at a TouchLab event. Tell us a little bit about the event.
It was just like a happy hour that we have every once in a while for friends and clients and stuff.
Nice.
And Ron was there.
Yes, I had a surprise cameo, and I was like, Liam, you should come on the show. Jason, we should have him on the show, and it happened. It's amazing.
Were you just walking down the street, and you were like, oh, hey, there's a party. I think I'll go.
I was like, I think TouchLab is up there. No. I talked to our other friend of the show, Jeff, from TouchLab. We were talking about business stuff, and he's like, you're around Friday? You should come for a drink. And I was like, I am around Friday. I would like a drink. And that's how that happened.
Who wouldn't like a drink on Friday?
So. I would love a drink right now, actually. It's Valentine's Day. Why am I not drinking?
It's a good question.
Liam, if I remember correctly, we had a very heated progressive web app versus native app conversation, right?
We did indeed. We went in-depth.
And where do you stand on the fence, or on which side of the fence when it comes to progressive apps versus native apps, if I can talk?
Oh, wow. I think that native apps still have a lot of advantages over progressive web apps. But progressive web apps are an interesting idea, so I'm interested to see where they go.
Yeah. Excellent.
Are indeed interesting. I think they're the future, but I agree with Liam, though. We still are ways off. But before we get started, as we mentioned at the top of the show, it is Valentine's Day, and here we are, and I can't think of anybody. So, Jason, I got you a Valentine. All right. But then I was like, well, I can't
I
just
will
get
be
Jason.
Yours, Ron.
I just can't get Jason a Valentine, a little Android Valentine there. So, Brian, I got you a little something, since we both have Twin Peaks.
Yeah. Perfect.
So, there you go.
The answer is in there too.
Will you be my special agent, Brian?
And then, the answer is yes.
Oh, yes. And so then I was like, well, I can't get Jason and Brian one and not get Flo a Valentine. So Flo, here's my very special Valentine for you.
Oh my gosh! It's 90210
Valentine for those
it's
audio
Emily
listeners.
It's Emily Valentine
with a shirtless Jason Priestley.
Yes, exactly.
With Brandon Walsh.
Yes, but then
this is after
I was
they
like,
did Euphoria.
That was a great episode. But then I was like, oh, but I don't want to leave Liam out. So, Liam, I got you a Valentine. And it's special.
Amazing.
That is
you a Valentine's card.
It's a very material / Google Now-y Valentine's card.
I love
That's
it.
It's so nerdy.
So there you go. So happy Valentine's Day, my Android friends. So from my heart
Ron,
to yours.
You are the best.
Wow.
I had the original idea to make you guys Valentine's, and I got all giggly. But when I realized Liam was on the show and I found the material design card spec, I was like, oh, this is great.
I have to do this.
I'll decorate for Liam. There we go. Just keep that
perfect.
There.
If you could just keep that in the background of Liam's shots. We're designing your wall for you, Liam. I hope you don't mind.
That's actually, and just so you know, that's actually the Google Fit icon, app icon.
It's appropriate.
On the car examples of material design cards. So there you go. So happy Valentine's Day, guys. Love you.
Oh, geez. Have we ever had an All About Android on Valentine's Day?
I wouldn't know, but I feel like, doesn't it refresh every 5 years?
Like, is it one of those holidays? Yeah, that's probably.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time. I don't remember us having one on Valentine's
Can
Day
Google
before.
Answer
but
that?
I'm pretty sure that you've never given us a Valentine.
When was before? The last time Valentine's Day was on a Tuesday?
Let's test.
Here we go.
Okay.
Okay, that didn't help me.
It went into the future instead of into the past.
Right. Well, Google failed at that one.
Well, whatever.
So it was on 2014. It was on a Friday. So back it up from there. 13 was the Thursday.
Well, today's
12 was a Wednesday.
Yeah, I don't know. It's 11 all over.
So
the
I think
place.
It's 6 years. Yeah, it's not 7 years. I think it's 6 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
anyway, now
whether we did or whether we didn't, I know for a fact that Ron did not give me a Valentine or anyone else on the show a Valentine in previous years. This is a first. Feels like a new dimension for our friendship.
If I had my act together, I would have had those printed and mailed to each one of you a week ago, so you would have had them physically there.
That's too much in this day and age. That's too much.
With an individually wrapped piece of nougat inside. Yeah.
Exactly. Nougat.
Sorry.
Yeah, really quality.
Liam, where do you stand? Nougat.
I still think it should have been called Neapolitan.
We're taking a hard stance. Okay.
I see. Deflection. Deflection.
Love it.
Answer the question. Refuses to answer.
Nougat?
Even though
I've never actually had standalone like nougat as its own food. I've always said nougat.
It's the chewy part of Snickers, but on its own.
But when you have it on its own, it's a different world. It's I don't know. I'm still
is
like some of it's good, some of it's bad, but none of it's like
a good world.
None of the standalone nougat I've ever had is the kind where when I'm really hungry for something sweet, I go, I know what I want.
But I still think about that savory nougat cracker that you have at your desk. It's so good. It's
where
the perfect
is
balance
it? That my desk. My desk is a pigsty.
We'll
I'm not surprised
it after
that
the
I don't
show
know.
And all.
It's in a box full of a bunch of nougat that I have stashed there. Anyways, digress. This week we have a lot of stuff that's related to Android to talk about. We're going to be checking in on the state of material design with Liam. Perfect time to kind of check in and see how it's evolved and all that kind of stuff. Also, Android Wear 2.0 is the big news. Last week, but it happened the day after the show. Google didn't get the memo that they normally launch these things on the day of the show. Next time, we hope they'll do better. Also, we'll talk about LG Watch Sport, LG Watch Style. I've got the Samsung Chromebook Pro. You've got the Asus something.
Something Chromebook Flip.
Chromebook Flip. There we go.
You know what? Don't give it number names, okay? If you want me to know what it is. Don't give it model numbers.
Both of them run Android apps, anyway. Though. That's the Android tie-in. Play Store's getting all cleaned up and a whole lot more. And that's it. Let's get to the news, Brian. What do you say?
Whether or not you have a special someone, we've got what you love. And it's called Android News.
My ears are hurting so much that beeping is like piercing through my skull. I don't know what that means.
Oh?
Yeah. I think I have allergies. I blame my allergies.
Oh, okay.
The beeping and the little... Anyways, I'm very easily distracted today, and I apologize. In honor of our guest, Liam, We should start off with some material design news before we get into the discussion. Nicholas Jitkoff, I hope I pronounced that right, Google's former lead designer for material design, was announced last week that he's going to be heading to Dropbox to be VP of design over there.
This was quiet, like, inside baseball news, by the way.
It is, but
not very loudly.
No, didn't. I mean, you didn't hear a whole lot about it. He was the principal designer at Google dating back to September of 2006.
Wow.
But former lead designer for material design. And the reason I thought we should talk about it, A, is because we talk about, you know, material design is very... has become a very critical part.
It was like skeuomorphism on iOS.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it continues to be the standard. So I wanted to ask you, Liam, I mean, is this a big deal when the lead designer of a major kind of focus for something within Android, you know, changing the head of material design, something that's been very important for the last 2 years? I mean, does this actually, would you think, change things as far as how material design develops over the course of the next however many years?
I actually don't think so. I think that Google has done a really good job, especially recently, of like building up a pretty huge design leadership within the company. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously it's a big deal that he's leaving, but everybody seems happy about it. You know, there are obviously things that I would change about Dropbox's design, so I'm excited to see what he does there.
I would agree.
There was some shade there, Liam.
In terms of Google, though, I think they're going to be fine. I mean, they have a ton of really brilliant people there who have a good handle on material and the platform.
Yeah, Bleak in chat room says, you know, not if he set the ground rules for the design language, ... which he did, which is true.
Well, yeah. But at what point does the movement become more than the man? You know what I mean? Like if he so yes, he set the ground rules, but they have a whole team around him who are supporting it, who are creating it. Designers like Liam and other designers are building off of it, utilizing it, creating examples. So it's kind of like at some point you gotta let separate the man from the methodology, I guess. You know, and I guess this is I guess the future of it will be proven as to his absence affecting it or not.
And will Dropbox get a new UI refresh that we like?
Or that is very material design.
Oh, my goodness.
what's interesting about Dropbox is that they are slowly, subtly making little changes and trying to navigate the Titanic almost. Not that it's sinking, but I mean like our big cruise ship. Like they released, what was that, Dropbox Paper? Right, that kind of collaboration
and
tool,
like
they
want
so appropriate.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's a good point, Liam. But yeah, they're trying to get out of just the we're online storage and more into the collaboration space, mm-hmm. competing with both Google Apps and Docs as well as Slack and other apps like that. So.
Yeah.
So much competition.
I know competition's good. Liam, how is kind of where do we stand with material design right now? We've had a couple of years. I mean, has it been 2 or 3 years at this point? We're very comfortable with it.
2014?
Is it 2014?
Yeah, it's been almost 3 years.
Almost three. Wow, that's crazy. I remember when that first hit. Yeah, no kidding. So what is the current state of material design? I feel like every once in a while we see kind of a refresh or additions to the spec. From your perspective, because you work obviously with this a lot, how do you think things are going with the spec? Do you think, is there any glaring, glaring element that you don't like, direction that you don't like? How are things going?
I think that the spec is doing well. I think it's progressing at a good pace. I think that if you know what you're looking at and understand like how to use a design guideline, then it's a really brilliant document. But I think that sometimes it can be a bit opaque in terms of like what areas are open to interpretation versus which ones are more important to the core of the platform, if that makes sense. And I guess the other thing that I would add is I wish that there were more links to developer documentation for a lot of things.
How do you mean there? It gives you the basic information and then it's open to, I don't know, people end up interpreting because it's not linked properly? Like, what is the downside there?
In terms of interpretation, I would say that there are certain parts of the spec that have to do with very low-level ways that people use things, like human interaction with the hardware and just platform basics, like things like button styles and stuff that shouldn't really be changed that much. Mm-hmm. But then there are other like more broad strokes things like navigation patterns and onboarding and things mm-hmm. like that that maybe are open to a bit more interpretation as far as how you want to use that for your specific product or express that, et cetera. So I think that sometimes those differences can be unclear to people.
That makes sense.
Yeah. One thing that I've noticed over the course of the 3 years is, okay, so you've got the spec to kind of unify the design of the platform. Some people obviously follow it to a T, so their app literally looks like all other apps that mm-hmm. also follow it
to a T. Which I appreciate when they do that, by the way.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, but at a certain point, when is that just too plain, too vanilla? I mean, I appreciate that there are rules and standards in there, but after a while, you know, with being 3 years in, there's a whole, you know, slew of apps that all look exactly alike. It's just they have a different function.
Or color scheme.
Right.
Is there a risk there?
So that's where you have to differentiate between like platform convention and like the unique expression of your own app.
Right.
So things like just the personality. So things like branding and how you want to express things. And that's an important piece.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine for like independent developers who are, you know, who don't have as much of a team surrounding them for creating apps, it's a lot harder to think of going in the same direction as like a big app, like Dropbox might be a prime example with their new hire here. If they were to redesign their app for Android differently from other platforms and maybe adhere closer to the material design spec, they already have their history and their design language from their app and the history of their app in general to kind of infuse it with and mix it with so that it still retains its personality but also appeals to the kind of standards of the platform. Let's say an independent developer doesn't have a lot of those resources, so the easiest and probably the most logical place for that person to go, at least right out of the gate, is to adhere to it specifically because that's better than not, I would imagine.
Right.
Yeah. What is, so you listed a few things as we were kind of getting ready for the show as far as topics that were interesting for you that you wanted to cover. One of those things was material components. Explain that a little bit. What is that?
So Google published a project on Dropbox called Material Components, which is basically a collection of repos for material components that you can use on web and Android and iOS. Which is cool. So I think it just represents, like I was just complaining that there's not enough developer documentation linked to mm-hmm. in the material spec, but this is, I think that this along with Material Motion, which is another collection that Google has published, which I believe is open source as well, represent them getting more into the tooling of material design and trying to help developers like feasibly implement these things and then share that with other developers, which I think is cool.
Interesting.
How complicated is it for a developer to kind of follow? I feel like, there's the basic spec of material design, which is, I have to imagine, relatively easy to follow because I see a lot of apps that follow it pretty closely. But then there, you know, it's starting to get a lot more complex with these components. You also mentioned prior to the show something about stage and gallery tools. Like there's a whole world here that, because I'm not a designer, I'm not super familiar with. Is it a complex world kind of following this stuff and following all the developments of this now 3 years in?
Kind of. I think it's a lot easier than it used to be. I mean, part of my job as a designer is to understand the platform limitations and kind of how technically feasible some of this stuff is going to be. Mm. So I've definitely sent Franco animations before that he's just like, no way this is happening, at least not like at 60 frames per second. So I think that motion is still pretty hard. But, you know, when material design first came out and the spec was first released, things like the nav drawer, that there was no navigation view, there was no floating action button, I think. So a lot of this stuff developers kind of had to make themselves, and then it eventually got added into the support library. So it's come a really long way in terms of actually implementing a lot of these components. But I think that things like motion because it sets the groundwork for kind of the principles of material motion. Mm-hmm. And then designers like me like go crazy with that and want to invent all kinds of cool stuff. It's harder to kind of, I guess, predict that and build the things that designers might come up with in a way that makes sense the way that the support library does. So I think that's still a challenge.
I wonder if this is going to be like, pardon me. I'm trying to think. I wonder if this is going to be like Web 2.0. You know what I mean? Remember when it was like
all bubbly and yes. with the shine?
Yes, Ron knows what I'm talking about.
Overly pretty,
yeah,
overly
like
pretty.
The aesthetic of Web 2.0 and how they were like, yeah, you know, designing for that, and the startups and the companies that were coming out were designing logos in that manner. Blah blah blah. So I'm wondering if, you know, the same sort of iteration is going to happen to material design. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point, because I was in a conversation with some non-tech folks trying to explain material design as a concept and trying not to explain it in the context of Android, you know, by purely just a, this is a design construct that doesn't have to be on Android. I mean, material design exists on the web. You could do it on iOS if you wanted, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and so it's really just kind of Flo, I think you have a point there. It's the look of now, and, you know, who knows, in 3 years from now, we're going to look back and they're like, oh, remember the material years, you know. But that said, I think that this methodology, at least in terms of, you know, seeing how it's applied to specifically to apps and to web design and interactive, you know, kind of interactive design that we've seen, that's what I always look for. Like, we're in the arena. I mean, I always call out that this is a good use of material design, because I think those are the principles that are good for not only looks but also functionality. And so, like, I guess, Liam, my question to you is, how much of a balance between when using the framework is that, like, this looks really good, but this actually allows it to be more functional?
I actually think that material design draws on a lot of classic design principles, mm-hmm, which is good. I feel like it has a strong foundation, and its premise of, like, interface in a physical dimension just makes logical sense. So in a lot of cases, if you pay attention to things like typography that material really emphasizes, and the use of color and using elevation to create visual hierarchy and stuff like that, like, you're going to end up with an interface that's stronger for the user, regardless of, I guess, the aesthetic.
Is there
interesting?
Yeah, is there any concern or even hesitation in the Android design world about the possibility of the design spec changing the way it did back when Hollow was a thing, and suddenly Material comes out of the, mm-hmm, gate, and everybody has to kind of change what they're doing to fit the new style? I mean, now we're 3 years in. I have to imagine Hollow didn't even exist for 3 years, right, before Material Design came around, or if it did, it was probably right at that. Do you think we're a ways out from a major shift like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to predict. I don't predict a major change of that scale coming, just because I think that this is such a strong system, and Google, yeah, has really put a lot of energy behind it and a lot of leadership and documentation and development and specification. Mm-hmm. So they've invested like a ton of energy in this. So I don't see them changing to something else just because.
Right. After all of that work, why suddenly upend it and have to start over? Because it's not just about helping designers and developers create cohesive apps. It's about creating the signature of Android is really what it's, right, become.
Which is why it's such a bummer when third-party manufacturers
when they mess with it, with their own design language.
I mean, you think about, like, the manufacturers who try to, you know, stay a little more towards stock, but what, mm-hmm, they're really doing is just painting the same picture in their own interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's the thing, is that it's that interpretation. I mean, like, I've seen apps a lot. I've heard anecdotes of companies that are making apps that, in order to work with Google, have to make their app more material designy, yeah, and they kind of roll their eyes while they do it. And I don't think that helps anyone. You know, like, I think, you know, trying to force an aesthetic is one thing, but to Liam's point, you know, enhancing a better UI and a better, you know, visual language. And that's what made material design so hard to describe in an audience of normals, which is like trying to describe the idea of depth and like the button sits on top of the page it's on, but they're like, but it's a flat screen. Like it's like explaining the nuance of that to somebody I strongly recommend it. If you ever had a party, listen, if you want to be the life of a cocktail party, start talking about material design and see how far that goes. I mean, I'm sure Liam, it happens to you all the time, right? You're at a bar in Manhattan and you just start talking to material and then people are just enthralled. Yeah.
He's throwing down the material knowledge.
But I mean, but it's an interesting exercise to try to explain the methodology behind a really good material app to someone who doesn't quite understand design methodology. That's my point.
Yeah.
And I love all the tools and stuff that they have to do stuff. I wish like if I was younger and had more time, I would be totally going all in and trying to be able to design this stuff. But people like Liam are much better than I ever would be. So
right, right.
And they say art degrees are useless.
I never got one.
I'm getting scooped.
What? It's true. I never got an art degree.
I was trying to make the point that they're not useless, that they're so nuanced. There's so much in art that we don't understand.
But they're important. You're right, Flo. They're absolutely important.
Useless to me because I'm a horrible artist.
That's fair.
That's why we need people like Liam to show everybody how it's done. Cool stuff. So, Liam, real quick here at the end, stage and gallery. You had mentioned that you wanted to talk a little bit about that, and I couldn't find a whole lot of information because it's all like TBD. It's all in the near future. What exactly are these? Are these tools for developers to, explain them? I guess.
Yeah. So, stage is like a prototyping tool, from what I know. I mean, basically, the public information is on the page that you have pulled up right now, so it's not very much.
Yeah.
But we do know that Google bought Pix8, and Pix8 is closing and presumably moving on to work on Google's design tooling in other capacities, which I would think is this. Hmm. So that's exciting. And then Gallery is... more about collaboration and feedback. So it sounds kind of similar to what I use Zeppelin for now, which is basically uploading finalized mockups, getting commentary and feedback on them, and then also providing like details to people and just tracking that. Mm-hmm. So it seems like Google's really serious about tooling. I mean, we've known that they are for a while, I guess, but these are like the first announcements of like new actual tooling products. So, and then of course we have people like Roman Nurek, who made the SVG animator tool, which is fantastic.
He's also responsible for Musée, if I remember correctly, right?
And the Android Asset Studio, which is incredibly useful, especially to developers. Like you said, if a developer doesn't have a designer, the Asset Studio is a huge help in terms of getting icons and any kind of assets that you need to make.
Is that why we see so many things that like kind of look similar in the Play Store sometimes?
That makes sense, right?
Totally.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, there's like a launcher icon generator that gives you like the boilerplate shapes, and then you can overlay a standard system icon on it. But you can also just grab system icons. You can make 9 patches. You can make device art.
Nice.
Sounds like... if I were younger, that sounds like something
sounds like
that
a playground.
I would like, delve into right, at like 11 p.m. on a Friday night.
It sounds like
nobody invited me out.
No, it sounds like when I was younger, it was all about Macromedia, Dreamweaver.
Oh my gosh, it was so hard.
It was
hard
like,
to use.
Ooh, I got a copy of that online, and I wasn't supposed to have a copy of it, but I have it. I'm going to become a really good Dreamweaver programmer.
Nobody made 3D.
I remember my first job out of college was at a agency in the .com boom, and I was a project manager. I worked with designers and developers, and I remember they were like, "All right, well, do you know Dreamweaver?" Because there were some like changes to some client website we had to make, and I was like, "No, I don't use Dreamweaver. I know how to code by hand. I don't need Dreamweaver. I don't need WYSIWYG."
Same thing.
Yeah,
I don't need no WYSIWYG.
I just use Notepad. I don't need anything else.
Those are the days.
I'm glad we could reminisce about it. There is a bit of nostalgia to the old way of computing life our children will never.
They'll have their own nostalgia.
To tell the truth, I used Sublime Text to code my new site. So
There it is.
It's not such an old way.
Well, I think the difference now is that, you know, me in college in the 90s, you know, sat at home and taught myself JavaScript and taught myself HTML and all stuff like that. And now a kid in college is sitting down teaching himself material Python. Design frameworks and Python. Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just the technology's mature. That's all. So, yeah, right.
But jealous. Really, right? Their technology is way more mature than the stuff we had back That's in for my sure. day.
Yeah, I mean, you had to be creative to get stuff done then, because like, you had limited tools.
Having
you
like
had to
trailing get really image on your cursor on your website was like,
I will never forget the hours I spent in my dorm room in the late 90s trying to figure out how to get a JavaScript rollover to work on my NAV.
Yes, like, I understand this pain.
Like I was looking at the source on like other websites trying to figure it out. I totally reverse engineered it. Yeah, that was
Oh,
so.
Man.
Oh gosh,
it was before CSS, Liam. That's the whole thing.
It was before style sheets.
Yeah, oh. it was awful.
BSS.
So, all right. Well, let's. Shall we move on?
I thought I made a good joke, but
I thought it was good.
Thank you.
It was good. I got it. All right.
Take it away, Ron. We got an email.
All right. We did get an email to switch gears, to change topics from material design back to that horrible month where Jason used an iOS device.
I'm still recovering.
I'm sorry. I told Leo I called you a traitor.
Oh, did you? I didn't hear about this until just now. You called me a traitor?
Well, I kind of was. Wow, you're really mean.
I know.
Wow.
Sorry.
It's okay. So, I forgive you.
Eric Chillingworth writes in. And says, I have a question that pertains to Jason's recent foray into the world of iOS. When the iPhone 7 came out, I switched back to the iPhone for the first time since I traded my OG iPhone for the Nexus 1. Wow. I really liked the hardware and the camera was amazing. There are a couple minor things that convinced me to return it when the Pixel came out. Siri can't seem to answer simple questions, and I like the suggested stories that Google Now serves up to me. Anyway, the real reason I'm writing is that I noticed that almost every app on iOS allowed me to log in and make purchases with my fingerprint. Everything from Amex to my bank to Lululemon and Nike allowed me to use my fingerprint to verify my identity and make purchases. This was super handy considering I use a password manager and super long, complex passwords. This may be a question for a developer, but why isn't this the case on Android? The only apps that really let me use my fingerprint to log in are 1Password and Amex just recently added it. Other than these couple of cases, almost none of the apps that accepted fingerprint verification on iOS accepted on Android. Is there some limitation or difficulty with implementing it on Android? And Eric, that's an amazing question because I can log into my bank app on Bank of America with my fingerprint, and you can make purchases on Google Play with your fingerprint. And once you go to using your fingerprint to confirm those purchases, you never want to go back. And I too wonder, why don't we have it more on Android? Does anyone have
fragmentation? Because not every phone uses a fingerprint
Nexus imprint.
I don't think that's the case. I think it might be developer laziness.
Yeah.
I mean, I think early on, because Samsung had a fingerprint sensor and they kind of used their own implementation, and then Google had an official API. Mm-hmm. So for a while, there were like apps that you had to support both because people have Samsung phones. But beyond that, yeah, I think it's just a lack of adoption.
Which is strange because anyone who has a fingerprint, and I have a fingerprint reader on their device, and I have to imagine a lot of, yeah, I hope so.
Otherwise. Where did they make you?
I'm a cyborg. Anyway.
Westworld.
Anyone that has used a fingerprint reader realizes the convenience of it. I have to imagine a lot of developers have a device with a fingerprint reader now. We're a couple of years into this fingerprint experiment on Android. So developers, I would guess many of them have a device with fingerprint reader, so I would think that they would want to program to something that would appeal to them, which would include that. I put a call out on Twitter because I was like, am I missing something? Is there some technical reason why this isn't happening? And yeah, some people mentioned the whole kind of crossing of the streams between Samsung's implementation and Android's implementation, but at least like support one, I wonder how complicated it is to set it up, you know, from a development standpoint. Is it a standard that is overly complicated to implement into your app? I imagine Google wouldn't make it that complex, but what do I know? I'm not a developer.
I think it's purely, I mean, this is my guess. I have no insight whatsoever, but I imagine, and maybe Liam, you can speak more to this because you're actually in the trenches working on it, but when you're working on an app, you have a long list of things you got to do, right? And there are things that are required and there are things that are nice to have. And maybe to Flo's point about fragmentation, maybe because of the fragmentation and not all the devices having it or whatever, my guess is that fingerprint scan is seen as a bell and whistle, as a nice to have. So
yeah, I think that's probably a fair characterization. I mean, as far as I know, it's not very hard to implement, you know, relative to other things. But yeah, I think you're right. And I think especially for established apps and especially from bigger companies, they're probably going to be focused more on things that drive other metrics than people authenticating with their fingerprint.
You know what trend I want to see, like, just completely nixed is asking me to log in with a separate login. Just let me use my Google account.
But not everybody wants that. That's why. And so then what you get is you've got Twitter, Facebook, Google, and all that sort of stuff. And trust me, I've been on the product side of it where you're trying to deal with, you know, this goes back to, as much as I complain about messaging, authentication is a whole nother thing. How we manage identity has become so fractured and awful. And that, you know, and, you know, there are some ways that, you know, that lean heavily on the social networks for authentication. Some, you know, a lot of Android apps, some of that lean on Google. But for every person who's like you, Flo, who's like, I want to log in my Google app, my Google account, there's somebody who's like, I don't want to. And
that's,
then you got,
that's,
you got,
true.
You have to provide it for a way for them to do it. Yeah.
If you have an Android device, then you have a Google account, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. True. Good point. Yep.
So there's that. But there are also apps that only have Facebook as an option, which is an app that I won't use.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is that as a good product person, you need to offer a, you know, alternatives. You need to offer, if you're going to offer Facebook, you also have to be able to register with an email address. Or if you're going to offer Twitter, also offer Facebook, also offer Google. And then it becomes this myriad of options, which is a pain in the butt. So, yeah.
I have a feeling a developer who creates an app that only uses Facebook authentication on Android is not developing for Android. They're developing for the fact that Facebook has billions of users, and this gives us a wider access to a number of users, not thinking about what that means for Android users. Like, I don't even have Facebook installed on my phone anymore, so anything that I used to log in to with a Facebook ID, which I have done, and now I'm realizing the result of that, the inconvenience, right, of that, like, it's a big inconvenience for me now.
But I guess from a developer perspective, like, adding the ability to sign up and log in with an email is like added technical complexity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Beyond just using an auth. Yep.
Yeah, totally.
Sigh.
Deep sigh. All right. Hey, let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode before we get into hardware, and that is ZipRecruiter. If you're looking to hire the best people, hey, this is the way to do it. Posting your job in one place is not that easy. It doesn't make your goal of finding quality candidates easy anyways. There's a whole lot of people out there in a whole lot of different places. You got to find them where they are. If you want the perfect hire, you're going to need to post your job on all of the top job sites. And ZipRecruiter makes that easy for you. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. One click, bam, 200 job sites. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post one time and you'll watch your candidates roll into the easy-to-use interface ZipRecruiter has on their site. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can quickly screen candidates. You can rate them as they come in. And, of course, most importantly, hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies. Thousands of small and medium-sized businesses are using ZipRecruiter to find the right candidates for their position. To not waste time doing all of that maintenance stuff on the back end, just send it off one time. 200-plus job sites, you'll get all the people that you need. Right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. That's ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of All About Android. All right. It's time not for hardware, but hardware. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Brian caught the subtlety.
Good
so
job.
Subtle.
So subtle, Jason. Subtle as a moose. So as you mentioned at the top of the show, it's been a while since this has happened.
Yeah.
But sure enough,
the day after our show, Android Wear 2 launched last week on February 8th on Wednesday. So we gotta get resynced back up with Google PR to coordinate this stuff, guys. Yeah. But here's
the point. Should ask friend of the show Hiroshi if he could.
We should. Yeah.
Remember us next time.
here's the skinny on Wear 2.0. Features include new design throughout. Standalone apps, Play Store native on-screen keyboard, expanded Google Fit functionality, including automatic activity recognition, Android Pay support, as well as Google Assistant. So there it is. Look at that new navigation.
You have a lot of apps, man.
I have, and I've got a flashlight, by the way.
Oh, look at that. Very cool. So tomorrow, many of the older Wear devices will see updates. And just so you know, the list of those devices that will get the updates, the Asus ZenWatch 2 and 3, the Casio WSD F10, the Fossil Q Founder, Wander, Marshall, the Huawei Watch, my favorite, the LG Watcher.
Watcher, yeah.
The LG Watch Urbane, the first and second generation. The Michael Kors Access Bradshaw watches, the Moto 360 second generation and the Moto 360 Sport, the New Balance Run IQ, the Nixon Mission, the Polar M600, and finally the Sony Smartwatch 3. They'll all be getting this update. So, Jason, Android Wear 2.0, has it changed your life?
I wouldn't say it's changed my life. It's got some cool...
What about those complications, man?
Hey, the complications are nice. Like, I'm happy that they're there. I need to use it more. I only got this like 24 hours ago.
Wait, swipe to the left?
Swipe to the left.
Click on the little gear.
Hold on. What do you need? This one?
Yeah, and then you can show people the complications.
Oh, yeah. So I can bring in different complications as Flo is talking about here. I can tap any one of these and assign different things to it. So what do I want to be in that little area there? Yeah, I'll make it a recorder. Sure, why not?
That's a good idea.
Yeah, for when I need to record things.
What's going on?
It has
different actions.
Yeah, so we'll do start, stop. There. And now, let's see. Now it'll refresh, I'm assuming. No?
Yes.
That didn't work.
No. Yes, it should. Why isn't it?
It should. Oops. You're right, Flo. It should.
What? Well, mine works.
Yeah.
Mine works fine.
You know, Android, always in beta. Basically. It's definitely improved. From a design standpoint, I actually like a lot of the changes. I really like the app selection.
You just like it because there's a crown.
I really kind of do.
Fun.
I do.
Look at that.
I do like the crown. Whee! And I laughed at the crown at first. And now that they've implemented an actual crown and not just a fake crown that's
satisfying.
A button, it's really satisfying.
So satisfying.
It's really nice. Liam, have you had a chance to take a look at Android Wear 2.0, kind of some of the design changes they've made there or any functionality that you like?
I don't have a device with it yet, but I will say that one of my favorite things that I have seen is that the scroll bars are curved now.
Yes.
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 I love that.
You can see that actually on the app selection on the side there, or it kind of curves.
It's so
around.
Nice. It doesn't look like, hi, we just stuck a square display
totally.
Into a round watch face.
I would completely
agree. It'll never be finished, but it looks close to being finished. You know, at least it looks a little more thought out and native to the device than just, rolling out an operating system that will work on any device, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I really want to know why that complication thing didn't show up there. Like, I had totally set it up, and now it's all blank.
Did you choose the right layout?
Well, I thought I did. I mean, it had all the things on there.
Well, a bunch of them have, like, different complication areas, and you can add, like... Like on some of the complication watch faces, you can add anywhere from one to, I think, at most, like six complications.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that was the one that I had selected. But for some reason, then
you don't want that one anyway. It's too busy.
What?
That
other one? Yeah,
one.
I was just using it as an example. So, okay. So there.
That's the one I'm using currently.
Okay. So then I'll tap on it. And
or a variation of it.
And see, it keeps going to this. Like, what is going on here?
We found a bug.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Live on the internet.
It keeps going right back to simple.
Wow.
Anyways,
something's going down.
Something is going down. Maybe it's now? 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 Now?
Did it die? What's going on?
I'm frustrated with this
watch. Thank you for that demo, Jason Howell. I have mine over here.
Jeez. How's yours? How do you like Android Wear 2.0?
Go.
I think it's peachy.
It's okay. I don't think it's like changed my life or like really added anything to my days. No. Honestly, it's better than it used to be. You know? No, I mean seriously, it's better than it used to be. But it's not game changing. I mean, and also this watch is such a disappointment.
Yeah. Okay. So Android Wear, we've kind of stumbled through this and revealed that it's not perfect and without its bugs. But what are you wearing? You're wearing the LG Watch Style.
LG Watch Style by LG Electronics of South Korea.
And what do you think about it?
I think it's actually a very pretty watch. It's one of the prettiest Android Wear watches that have come to the market, I will say. But of course, I'm saying this as a person who has not worn any of the hot couture fashion watches from such brands as Tag Heuer and Michael Kors. But I do think that this watch is just, I don't understand, first of all, why this rose gold version is $30 more than the LG. So the LG style is $250 and this is $30 more for the rose gold variant. And it doesn't have any bells and whistles. Like, there's no Android Pay on it, which is the one thing that I really wanted from a watch, because it's a thing I use every day. You know, at CVS or at the grocery store, I like to use NFC. I don't have that on this. There's no speakers on this. There's no barometer. There's no GPS. This is a plain watch. This is just a plain watch that you can take with you into the shower.
If you shower with watches,
I
don't understand.
I don't understand you. Don't you want to get that part of your body clean?
Yeah,
apparently
exactly.
Not.
I just don't get it. I don't get that. I mean, it's nice.
It's stylish.
I will give it that it's way thinner than the LG Watch Sport,
it's
which I'll talk about in a second.
Thin. You want to try it on?
Sure.
I don't want to try yours on.
You
but
don't?
You can try mine on.
This beast of a watch.
No, Leo already. I tried it on the new screensavers last weekend. And
we can do a side-by-side comparison.
It was hilarious.
Okay, so this is my first time.
It was hilariously big.
Okay. The side-by-side comparisons are always enjoyable to see.
Yes. So this especially on Jason Howell's wrists.
Yeah, that's for sure.
This is the style versus the sport. So if you want to get a little bit of idea of the elevation of the sport versus the
style. Well, because think about how much tech that you have stuffed into the LG Sport. I mean, you have a 4G LTE modem or whatever, cellular bands.
Yeah,
you have a speaker, you have a barometer, a GPS. What else have you gotten there? Two extra buttons.
Shortcut buttons. You can assign those to apps. So one of them could be Android Pay to launch it automatically.
Yeah.
And
you
one
have
one
a slot for
the
SIM that has to go in there.
Yeah.
So you can have that number. By the way, it's
I'm
a separate number.
I'm getting phone calls on that, by the way.
Yeah, so Leo was getting phone calls on Saturday as well, and I think he ended up getting like a recycled number. I assume that's like...
Yeah, I mean, he gave me a number and I signed it to my Google Voice, but I don't know that he removed his. So anytime a call comes in, I'm like, do I answer it? Because it might be for Leo.
It works.
But yeah, it works. I just don't know if I need
to. We had a telephone call with it.
On my wrist?
No, you don't. I mean, but maybe you do if you're out like running.
Yeah.
You know, it's for the sport is supposed to be for people to wear while they are being sporty.
Totally.
Although I definitely wouldn't wear, as Megan and I were talking before the show, like I wouldn't wear something like that.
This thing's gigantic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this thing is bigger than your hand.
But I don't even like to wear a Fitbit, like a skinny Fitbit, because it's just, you're sweaty and you just...
Yeah. I mean, personally, I'm not big into the whole quantified self while exercising thing, because I feel like every single... interaction around data around the workout that I'm doing is me stopping to look at a screen to enter things, and that just interrupts my flow. And I'm like, I just want to do the thing and get healthy.
Yeah, I just
I don't need to track every single
I just want
to
put a sticker on a calendar that says I went to the gym.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Done.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the LG Watch Sport, I'm only 24 hours into it and it's very big, but I've gotten used to it. I've adjusted to the weight on the end of my wrist that is there, but I don't know. It's just huge. I feel weird about the state of wearables right now.
They're not solving a problem.
Yeah.
It's not a good
really,
state.
Yeah.
It's not a good state to be in.
They just exist. You know, you have one as an extra accessory for your Android life.
But they're expensive accessories. That's the thing.
They're very, this was, I mean, yeah, they're relatively expensive.
$350.
Yeah, and this is $250, or $280 if you want the pretty one.
Right.
Which, by the way, I'm not happy about that because, you know, it's the same reason they charge $3 extra for women's razors. It's because they're pink.
It's a pretty tax.
It's a pretty tax or whatever. It's a, yeah, it's a pretty tax.
Pretty
pink tax. Pink tax, that's what they call it.
A what? A pink tax?
Yeah, pink tax.
Yeah, so I don't know. For Ron, when's the last time you wore a wearable? Are you at all intrigued by either of these watches?
No, I'm not. I had my watch that I used to wear until it died. And then I haven't felt the need to replace one. I haven't seen one with the killer app that makes it, you know, like, oh, yes, this will solve a problem in my life. And I don't think Android Wear 2.0, while refined and a little better, it's still just a nice to have. It's like a fingerprint scanner on an app, you know, like it's not totally required for me at this point in my life. So
where do you sit, Liam, in the wearable space? Have you had a wearable in the past? Are you kind of over it, or are you in it and you want to find a new one?
I had glass, so I was into wearables.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
That's true.
I have the Huawei watch because I thought it was the best looking of the 1.X batch.
I would agree.
But I really never wear it. I think I'm pretty much with everyone else here that so far smartwatches are just kind of like a neat thing to have, but I don't miss it if I don't have it. Yeah. I think that having Android Pay on it might be kind of cool.
Yeah. I want to test
it. Be very cool. That's something. Yeah.
And Huawei said that they're announcing, well, they kind of said it on Weibo a little bit, that they're going to be announcing the next one at MWC. So I'm excited to see that.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear
Hopefully they produced another pretty
gold encrusted, jewel encrusted watch. That's up my alley.
Is it?
The
really?
More things that
I want the gaudiest thing on the block.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
You're the person that they're appealing to when they do that with things, when they emblazon things with Swarovski crystals.
It's okay.
Do you?
So what? I'm the one paying extra for it.
Yeah. No. Hey, I'm not. Okay, I'm judging a little bit. I learned something about you. I did.
There's just Swarovski something fun crystals. About having like something ridiculously opulent on
when
you.
You show your watch, it like blinds them because it's all sparkly.
Yes, and I'm not gonna wear fur because that's murder. So I have to wear a sparkly watch.
Okay.
Sparkly I don't know. Watch. I don't have a sparkly watch. I don't have these things. I just imagine myself as an older woman with like lots of jewels.
Someday
probably
you'll
costume
have the
jewelry.
Sparkly Huawei watch. The sparkly Huawei watch.
The sparkly costume jewelry watch.
Well, until that day, Flo, if you do need a watch other than the LG style, you can go to Verizon because Verizon has announced their own branded Android Wear 2.0 watch that's called the Wear 24. Looks pretty styling. Okay. This is going to have a 1.39-inch circular display, 480 by 480 resolution. It's got LTE built in with Wi-Fi and NFC. And you can have this wonderful watch for the low, low price of $300 with a two-year contract available next month from Verizon. So
$300, two-year contract.
Plus the $10 activation fee,
plus the blah, blah, blah.
I just don't need a data plan for my watch. I hardly need a watch, let alone a data plan for it.
Are we becoming
jaded
or like,
I don't
do we
know.
Feel like we've been bombarded by things?
I don't know. I've been wondering that too, whether I've just become overly jaded when it comes to wearables. But I'm at a point to where it would take a lot to like move me back. And I don't know if I've just kind of crossed that line and I need back.
Well, I'm going to wear this.
I remember being excited about wearables. I remember
it's
that.
It's cute. I'm going to wear it. It's cute. And, you know, it serves its function, which is it looks good on my wrist. And, you know.
And it tells the time.
I can change the music on it.
I've just kind of gotten to the point also with wearables, with the watch wearable, where the reason I was using it before is because I wanted to look at my phone less. And then I realized I'm looking at my watch just as much as I would have been looking at my phone. I'm still looking at a screen. And what I've realized is I want less distraction. I don't want to be distracted by every single damn thing that happens on my phone or my watch. So I'd rather not wear a watch, put the phone over there, and live my life and use it on my terms.
I gotta
that's
say,
where
I
I'm
like
at now.
I like the aging of Jason, the old man aging.
You know what? No, we should just, we need to go into the woods. We need to go to the woods and like reconnect.
What were you going to say, Liam? You had something to say.
I was just going to say, actually, maybe part of the reason that I don't wear my watch anymore is that pretty much ever since Nougat was released, mm-hmm. or maybe Marshmallow, I've had my phone on Do Not Disturb mode.
All the time.
I never hear any notifications, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
And in fact, like a week ago, I was like, you know, I'm going to turn on notifications because, you know, like sounds are kind of fun, you know, whatever. It took exactly one notification coming in before I turned it back to silent.
Yeah, I'm the same. I like having a little buzz, and you're like, oh, okay. And, you know, like the Ring doorbell will give me three little buzzes. I know how many
sponsor
buzzes
network,
each
by
things.
The way, full disclosure.
Yes. I know how many buzzes, like, each thing means.
Mm-hmm. But you like getting the buzzes? You like knowing?
I do. I like knowing. I'm like, okay, I got a text message. I'm going to leave it alone.
Yeah.
You know, oh, that's a snap. I can check it later. Oh, somebody's calling me.
Like, that's an important one. That one I want to know. But I completely agree, and I'm right there with you, Liam. My phone is almost always on Do Not Disturb. I don't even do it intentionally. It's just the way I leave. It's like my natural habitat for my phone now is Do Not Disturb.
It's always Do Not Disturb until the next alarm.
Yep.
Well, and I've got Do Not Disturb on so it doesn't buzz or make any noise. And then I've got Push Bullet on my desktop so it just stays to the left and I get notifications there. And I can ignore them. They go away within a couple seconds. Or if I can go check them if I need to. It's the perfect kind of setup. So
Yeah.
You want to know what's also a perfect setup?
What?
Why, our sponsor, WordPress.
Oh, that's a perfect setup.
There you go. We want to thank WordPress for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And WordPress.com wants to salute all the small business owners out there that are making a big difference. The tool belt toting public plumbers, the canine sweater stitchers, the horn-rimmed glasses wearing flat screen TV installers, the corner deli footlong deliverers, and the mom and pop lawyers who look out for our best interests. That was a mouthful. Thank you, WordPress. That's awesome. With all those small businesses, they're doing their thing, and WordPress is quietly powering their sites and the websites for thousands of small businesses like them. And I also salute the small businesses. As a small businessman myself, I cannot live without WordPress. And in fact, WordPress is responsible for more websites than any other platform, with thousands and thousands of websites running WordPress. And they've all got their great built-in search engine optimization and mobile-friendly design. Your customers can find your website easily and access it from any device. And like I said, whenever I need to set up a website for business, I look to WordPress because they provide the most amount of flexibility and dependability of any other platform out there. So if you are a small business owner and wants to make a big difference, consider your building your site on WordPress.com. WordPress offers you 24/7 support so you can find answers to your questions and get back to getting stuff done. And I cannot stress how important it is to not have to worry about your website. You got business to do, whether you're a plumber or a lawyer or a deli owner. You want to make this run smoothly so you don't have to worry about it. And WordPress is the best way to make sure that happens. So listen, if you're a small business person or just someone who wants a website, WordPress is a great option and it's easy to get started with 15% off any new plan purchase. Just visit WordPress.com/allaboutandroid to create your small business website today. That's WordPress.com/allaboutandroid and get 15% off your new website. And we thank WordPress for their support and allowing me to relax so I don't have to worry about my business's websites. Thank you, WordPress.
Thank you, WordPress. WordPress.com/allaboutandroid. All right, now we're going to do a reversal. We're going to jump into the other hardware real quick. This is kind of Chrome OS, but it's kind of Android because now Chrome OS is kind of Android to a certain degree. It can run all Android apps for the most part if the hardware is supported entirely.
Yeah, but I'm finding that the integration is not 100%.
Not amazing, there. Not 100%.
Yeah, like for instance, so this is my first Chromebook ever that I've ever used.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the Asus C302. DHM4 Chromebook Flip.
Yeah, I love
that. What it is, okay? It has an Intel Core M3 processor, 64 gigs, 4 gigs of RAM. It runs and looks like your run-of-the-mill laptop, but
there it is.
Into a tablet,
So that's cool.
It's
in tablet
my
mode.
Favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But I was having issues with this the other night, by the way, before I updated the software. But anyway, so this is, you know, my brand new little toy. And I'm keeping a diary this week. and publishing your diary to Android Central. But I'm keeping a diary about my first couple of days with Chromebook, and I've been really just exploring this world, exploring what is available, what I can do with this, when, you know, it's feasible to use this instead of my MacBook Pro for work. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to figure that workflow out, though, because the whole process of editing an image and saving and then like finding it when you're uploading to a CMS and, you know, you have this operating system that relies on this browser and everything anyway. So, and also like figuring out which apps to download that I need that can do the things that I want.
That's been one question that I ask myself is, great, I have access to all the Android apps on my Chromebook. What Android app am I going to install? So, which one do I need to install? Wait a minute. Why?
There is an issue with this. So there was a question if I've tried Snapchat. It won't work on here for some reason. Because I was going to try and do like, I'm snapping from my Chromebook. I'm
Will
still
it not
trying
install?
To do that. No, it's on here.
Oh, okay.
It's on here just fine.
Because Snapchat forces vertical, does it?
It does. So when it forces vertical, what it's going to do
Windows. Okay.
I'm going to actually... Okay, yeah. So it gives you a window in the middle of the screen.
Not sure that we'll be able to see that. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, there we go.
I got you. Boop.
Oh, no, it's vertical.
So look, I have to use it like this.
Okay. All right.
So hold on, I'm going to put in my password.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, so I found that this is just kind of a little awkward, and also was awkward is that with certain apps... I guess not speaking near the bike is bad. With certain apps, you don't have all the functionality. So, for instance, with Lightroom, I can't access the SD card that I have inside here with all the... I have a micro SD card in here right now with photos that I took with my DSLR.
So some of that hardware is accessible to Chrome OS, but when you intermix the Android app... Yes. with the Chromebook hardware, sometimes there isn't a
good access.
Yeah, so
it says over here, like... It says use SD card, and that is a function that I cannot.
Okay. Like, because the Android app isn't programmed.
I'm assuming. So what I did is I did a quick. I've only had this for like 5 days, by the way. So I'm still learning a bunch of stuff. So I apologize if I sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. But I never used Chrome OS because at the last gig there was somebody covering it full time. So like there was there was really no need for me to cover it. So. Now that I'm like in it, I'm immersing myself, trying to figure out what's what. So yeah, I was reading forums, and apparently there's an issue where the Android apps don't yet recognize the SD card storage on the Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like a similar situation like what we had on Android for a while. So, which is kind of a bummer. And also because when you do have apps on your device... on the actual Chromebook, it doesn't give you the option to open it in any of those Android apps.
They're all
siloed. I keep trying to show you, and then I keep going back.
They're all siloed from each other? Is that what it is?
Let me give you an example. So the screenshot, for instance, if I want to edit it, press an...
Oh, so like Chrome OS capability of recognizing you have an Android app for Lightroom installed.
Yeah,
do you want to open this in your Android app in Lightroom?
This is really bright. Sorry about that, gang. All right, there we go. That's easier to see. So it only gives me the action to open with Keep, Photos, OneNote, Snapchat, Snapseed. Oh, I can share with Snapchat? That's interesting. Because that is an Android app. See, I'm still figuring this out. Like, I don't understand why I can't open this in Lightroom.
So then I wonder if that's a Snapchat consideration that Snapchat actually programmed in to have some sort of interoperability between Chrome OS.
I highly doubt that, considering, like, I'm having trouble just logging in, and I'm not entirely sure why. I don't know. So I'm still figuring this out, guys. I don't know.
Based on what you've seen, though... would you recommend anybody who's considering an Android tablet go Chromebook instead? Chromebook convertible?
For productivity, yes.
For productivity.
Because, I mean, this thing is still kind of heavy. It's pretty dense. Like, when you fold it over into a tablet, you're still holding a keyboard on the other side, which you have to be careful with that. You can break that keyboard.
Yeah, this is the Samsung Chromebook Pro.
Pro. So that has the stylus?
Yeah, and I just, yes, it has the stylus, which I have not pulled out yet. There it is.
You can put it in backwards, by the way.
Oh, you can? Oh,
yes,
good.
But don't.
Good. I was planning on it. yeah, so I literally, Leo gave this to me right before the show. So I've had no time to play with it. I've just run the show on it. But I'm very curious to kind of test it out because I need to upgrade my Chromebook Pixel. I have the first generation Chromebook Pixel.
You do.
And it needs to be upgraded because it cannot run Android apps. But I would like to be able to do
should
that.
Should we confer next week with, like, you know, or the end of our Chromebook journey notes?
Because I'm going to be writing about it. Because this is going back to Leo probably tomorrow. But yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's a short trip.
It's your
right around the block with a Chromebook.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's merely a taste.
Well, that's a bummer.
That's okay. I'm considering buying this one. I don't know if this is the right one to go with, but so far, yeah, I mean, it's kind of neat. I don't know. I just don't know if I have much room in my life for a dedicated Android tablet, so I feel like this would be a good bridge device.
Absolutely. And I think that this is the computer I'm going to be taking with me to briefings from now on because, I don't need to file anything from a meeting. So I don't need to have my big retina screen MacBook with me all the time. You know, and that guy is kind of dense. Yeah. He's light, but he's still kind of dense.
Yeah, absolutely.
This guy I can just pop into my purse, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we'll check back in on that next week and see kind of where you're at as far as that's concerned. We have some app news to talk about.
Yes, we do.
So apparently Google is looking to clean up the Play Store, more or less forcing developers to update or create their privacy policy. If they didn't have one before, create a privacy policy. If they have one, update it by March 15th. This is a letter that's going out to some developers. Otherwise, Google might actually restrict visibility of the app in the Play Store or even remove it altogether. It's really just kind of about more transparency around how developers are using user data, how they're handling that data, explaining what permissions are needed. There's a ton. I mean, if you ever have gone, and we all have because we've searched the Play Store a million times, you go to the Play Store, you do a search for a particular name or a particular app, you get so many results. And then when you click through, like sometimes it's obvious by the icon what era of Android it was created, but then you click in sometimes. And you realize, yeah, sometimes you realize, oh, that was, yeah, hasn't
since
been updated since 2011, but yet, you know, what is it asking for? There've been a lot of developments in Android since then around security and around respecting security and stuff. So this is, I think, a way for Google to kind of clean house a little bit and say, if you're not regularly updating your app or you don't update these things, then you probably don't care that much about the app anymore. And out with the old, in with the new. What do we
think? Maybe they can also purge some of those 60% that have never been installed.
That's
a good idea.
Those exist?
Like there's apps that have never been installed?
That was the whole crux of the progressive web app versus native app conversation from a couple of weeks ago we had, which is that stat that 60% of apps in the Play Store have never been installed.
I totally missed that stat.
That's
such
a crazy statistic.
That's crazy.
Yes.
What a waste of data.
What do you mean?
It's just what a waste of bits and bytes.
Not if it's your app.
Just thinking. If
you created the app, all you want are people to use it.
Sorry to the people who don't have...
Luckily, the cost of hard drives are so cheap now, they can manage it. So.
No, it's just in vain. True. Nobody likes to waste things, okay?
This is a good move, right? This is the right way to go about it, to clean up the Play Store. I mean, I feel like what we're entering is... We're finally entering realizing the fact that these app stores have been around for as long as they have.
They have.
Yet all they've done is collect more and more and more. The race for the longest time was, which app store has more apps in it?
Since it was the Android marketplace.
And yeah, that's right. Oh, I remember that.
Yes.
And now we're kind of getting to a quality over quantity point.
As it should be.
No, absolutely.
It was like when Apple, you know, clamped down on fart apps. Somebody had to do it.
Liam, the most important question of the day, should there be more fart apps in the Play Store?
I don't know how many there are, so it's hard to say.
Well,
that's a metric that I don't have for you. I apologize.
Quick, Let's do a quick Google search.
Flo is going to check in on the amount of fart apps in the Play Store. Ron, take the next story in the meantime.
We're better than fart apps, by the way. And you know who's also better than fart apps is Amazon. Amazon today launched a new app, which I thought was interesting when I read about it. It's called Amazon Chime, and it's being touted as a competitor for Skype or WebEx or Zoom, which is a popular meeting platform. And basically what it is it includes a way for participants to collectively mute those with distracting background noise, like a barking dog. Luckily, my dog is asleep on the couch and not barking, so we don't need to worry about that. The muted person sees their line was muted by others, and they can unmute when they're ready to talk. And calls can come in by regular phone as well. So, you know, a lot of people were comparing this to like kind of a Skype competitor, but it's really more of a video conferencing business kind of app, not just, you know, while Skype is VoIP and is used for business conferences and conference calls, it's also used for point to point. This is more of, like I said, for a Zoom or a WebEx, which is like kind of group meetings. Mm-hmm. They've got three pricing tiers by different group sizes. The basic is free one-on-one calls and group chat. Plus version is $2.50 a month and adds screen sharing support. And you can pay the pro level for $15 per user per month and allows for meetings up to 100 users. And Android is supported, of course. They released apps for every platform, which is how you should do it. But what I thought was even more interesting was the way this approaches it. If you're like me and you've got a lot of remote meetings and things like that, you're waiting for people to dial in and things like that. But if you're signed up for a meeting with Chime, the app will call you when the meeting started, which I was like, oh, that's a different way of taking switching it around. Right. Like, so you're supposed to be in a meeting. The app starts lighting up saying, hey, you're into this. Join in the meeting. So you're no longer waiting for people to dial in. I don't know. I just thought it was neat that Amazon rolling out a platform like this on an app basis, you know, like really, I thought that was interesting. What do you guys think of it?
I really like that you can mute the other person's line because there is nothing that drives me my gosh.
Well, what's funny is that like you're on calls with people and it's clearly them and they don't know it or deny it. Like, no, that's not me. Like someone's like, oh yeah, I'm calling in from a Starbucks. It's like, well, it's really noisy. Can you mute your phone? It's like, no, it's not. Like they don't hear. And so that's like it's an out of the box kind of way of thinking about the conference call, which I think is good. So
nice. Way to go, Amazon. I like that.
We'll see if they figured it out, the conference call. I feel like that's still
up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed that they didn't include the ability to wear digital hats and make your eyes really big.
Aren't they taking that away from Hangouts?
I think they...
Yeah.
Yeah,
they did.
They already did, right?
They did already? I thought it was going away in April.
Well, I know that their focus on Hangouts is more enterprise.
Enterprise, yeah. They paired it way down.
Enterprise doesn't want silly hats? Come on,
seriously,
people.
Everybody
this
in the
is
enterprise
Google making
hats.
It. I would expect that they want silly hat is required.
Or at least a tie. You know, put a tie on me.
Nobody
I'm not wearing
wears,
a tie, but for this
tie in Silicon Valley.
That's true.
Nobody wears a tie in Silicon Valley. That's
a very good point. Good point.
Well, on to other good news, which will make you think, why the heck wasn't this available yet? The Pixel can now do commands with home control. You can actually control things in your house. This includes things like the Nest, Hue devices, SmartThings, Belkin devices, Wemo devices, Honeywell devices. Those are all the ones that are coming out to start. Of course, you can take care of these in the Google Home app.
Or you can just bark a command at your assistant.
Well, you have to set it up.
Well, yeah. Well, that's true. You set it up in home.
You can set it up in there.
Yeah.
Which is great. So you can just use your phone to do things instead of having to have a Google Home nearby.
Love it. It's one step closer to unifying Assistant. Google's very good at rolling out things and having it not be unified from place to place.
Hold on.
What?
You know what's not unified?
What?
Is this watch on my...
That's what I'm
watch
talking
on my wrist.
About.
This guy does not have full functionality of Google Assistant. It is so frustratingly limited.
Is it partial functionality of Assistant then?
It's partial functionality in the sense that it only understands a certain, you know, library of commands. So, you know, it'll say, sorry, I can't do that right now. If you ask it to do something that like Google Home can do.
Right.
So I'll ask it to play things on Chromecast in specific parts of the rooms of my house or whatever. And it can't do that.
Yeah. Well, then that's one of my complaints
with the
assistant on the
watch.
Phone is like, I'm upstairs, play such and such album downstairs in the kitchen. and you know my home would figure that out, but my watch doesn't. Yeah. What do you think, Liam? Assistant feels like it's all over the place as far as that is concerned. I love Assistant. How has your experience been, and what do you think about their efforts to kind of unify it?
I think that, at least to some extent, I'll defend the all-over-the-placeness of Assistant, because I feel like using it in different contexts or different hardware necessitates different features. Like Assistant in Allo, for instance, it makes a lot of sense for it to be different there because it's a chat app.
Mm. I agree with that.
Yeah. But that being said, I think there are a lot of instances, like what Flo was mentioning, that makes sense to be able to do that from whatever hardware you're using. Maybe not inside Allo, but from your watch, why not?
Especially a watch that you're wearing with you everywhere in the house.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, it's just kind of, as a user, it's just another example of Google rolling out something that does something so well in one instance, but not in another. But as a user, it's very hard to understand. Like, we follow this stuff, so maybe it's easier for us, but the general user is going to have a harder time understanding why it works differently in two different places when it's effectively the same technology.
It does make an unpredictable experience, which is probably not good. But that said, I don't know if everybody has, you know, a phone and a Google Home and a watch and everything, so who knows?
That's true.
My favorite is when you ask a command in the house, and then all of your devices go, brink, brink, brink. Which one of us are you talking to? Hold on. Wait. We need to coordinate.
We all want to help you.
My poor tablet. Can I complain about Google Home for a moment?
Yes.
Sure.
Here is my feature request. Now, after using it a lot, I've identified one specific thing that's driving me crazy. I want a separate volume for music than from the assistant voice.
Yes. Oh, really? Very true.
I've never thought of that.
Ron is so right.
I would add to that maybe an equalizer.
Yes.
Because I feel like when I'm playing music, the bass is like punching through my heart and like everything else.
As it should be.
For that EDM. I have experienced the same wish for an equalizer, Liam. But even more so is like, so just tonight I was cooking dinner and my girlfriend had the volume lower and we had music playing and I called out, I was cooking dinner, I needed a timer, and I said, and it didn't go off. Okay, good. It didn't hear me. Shh. But I said it and then it responded, but I couldn't hear it. And then the music started playing and I was like, well, this is no good for me. Like I want to have like similar to the phone where you can have a separate music volume to an alarm volume to the notification volume. Give me different levels. So
I want choices. Damn it.
Yeah. I would like it if like when the volume is lower on Home Assistant's voice, like changes to a whisper.
Yep.
Let's see here. We're our effort here at Twit is to try our very best to not say the wake words anymore, which is really difficult. It's really difficult to do that. So I apologize if we're setting off your devices when we talk about Google Home. We're trying.
Well, we should have
a safe word. Hey G is our safe word, isn't it? Hey G.
Yeah. Okay G.
Okay G. Yeah. Either way.
Well, I wanted my safe word to be red, but whatever.
Oh, geez. Why are we saying safe words?
It's Valentine's Day.
That's true.
50 Shades of Android right here. 50 Shades of Green.
All right. Hey, I think that's the perfect time to take a break. Thanks, sponsor of today's episode. That is Tracker. We're all used to losing our possessions. Newsweek reports the average American wastes 55 minutes a day. 55 minutes looking for things that they own but they can't find. Well, Tracker is here to save the day. Makes losing things a thing of the past. We're going to tell you how to get one for free. The Tracker Bravo locates misplaced keys, wallets, luggage, instruments, bicycles, electronic devices, even pets in seconds. The coin-sized device is constructed with anodized aluminum for the most durable, the thinnest tracking around. You can easily attach it to your items, whatever they happen to be. It has a key loop, also adhesive if you want to stick it there. Tracker's enabled by Bluetooth LE, so battery efficient. Battery lasts up to 1 year. You can add a laser engraved message to each Tracker Bravo, you know, things like pet information, return information if you like, or you can even personalize your tracker with your own custom printed image. Compare tracker to your iOS or Android device and find its precise location with the tap of a button. That's really all there is to it. The phone can actually track up to 10 separate devices at once. And you can customize two-way separation alerts. That way you're going to be notified before you leave your item behind. If you lose your phone, you just press the button on tracker and your phone will ring, even if you happen to leave it on silent, like I usually do. With over 3.5 million devices shipped, tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world. So your last item will show up on a map, even if it's miles away. And if you lose your item, the tracker app records its last known location on a map. And then when another tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you'll then get a GPS update so that you know where your item is located. Go to thetracker.com right now and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code AAA, you're going to get a free Tracker Bravo with your order. That's thetracker.com, promo code AAA to get your free Tracker Bravo today. And we thank Tracker for their support. All right, without further ado, it's time for the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Last week's poll, bit.ly/AAAvote304. And I have not looked at it, so I'm going through previous responses. Whoa, it was very evenly split, no?
Wow.
Well, the pie chart looks evenly split.
It was a tie.
Neck and neck.
Almost a tie.
For whom? For who was that?
Oh, wait a minute. Refresh it.
Yeah, refresh.
Okay.
Refresh.
It was a tie.
Refresh. It's not anymore.
I'm seeing a different result.
I am too. Morning Reader appears to have taken late stage lead.
All right.
Wow, that really eked itself out there. 102 votes. That's 32.4% of the votes for Morning Reader. We had 32.1% of the votes for Star Chart VR. Flo, it was a neck and neck tie between your app.
No, that was Megan.
Oh, that was Megan.
That was Megan.
Right.
That was Megan.
Now we're both brown haired.
Sorry.
And I forgot. Sit next to you.
I'm just so used to you loving virtual reality and sitting next to me.
It's true.
It's true. That's right. Okay, so then Morning Reader, that was yours, Ron, right?
Yes, it was.
Okay, so that's the winner, 32.4% of the vote. Guest. That was Megan's. Gets second place, Star Chart VR. Third place, Five Calls. That was Flo with 19.7%. And then my app, Fire Emblem Heroes, not seeing a whole lot of love, 15.9% with 50 votes. What are the standings, Ron?
According to Wake County, I'm in first at 21. The guests have got 18. Flo's got 13. And Jason's got 11.
I got lucky number 13, eh?
There you got it. So
lucky number 13. Okay, so that means, let's see here. I got to move these things around here. Who goes? So I go first. So who's the winner or the returning winner?
Is that me, so I'm last.
Okay. Why am I doing
this? By the way,
the
winner is Ron. I don't know if you guys heard, but the winner of last week's Android App Arena was Ron.
Fine, Ron. Whatever. All right. So let's take a look here. I'll go ahead and launch my app. First of all, I have to give a thanks to Kapil Agrawal. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing your name, and I apologize. This ties into a conversation that we had a few weeks back. I've been meaning to bring it the last couple of weeks. Finally doing that now. Around transit information. And I'm trying to remember the exact conversation. Anyways, he sent it to me and said this really tied into what we were talking about. And it's a really nicely designed app. It's called Transit, real-time transit app. And right now you can see that it's pinpointing my location based on where I am now. What it does on a Google map up here, it locates that, and then it finds all of the transit options that are around here, including, as you can see, Uber as an option. I can tap into there. This is the 48 downtown Santa Rosa. I don't know if the smart train is on here. Yeah, is the smart train even going yet?
I don't know. You know better than me.
No, I don't even think it's active yet.
Oh.
But I'm sure it'll be. I would imagine it would be here eventually once it actually happens. So you can see there's the 48 line, downtown Santa Rosa, Coddington Mall. If there is a line, okay, that trip has expired, so we can't see that. It's probably out of service. What I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to go ahead and locate me into San Francisco. where
there's actual
where there's choice. Things and life and stuff going on and choice of places. So let's see here, the 21 inbound ferry. I can go ahead and check out the lines. You can see the line. You can also see
take the ferry to Larson.
Where the vehicles are, where the buses are along the way, what stop they're at. One thing that you can do is you can set, let's see here, stop the schedule. There's a way to set a stop and get an alarm based on that. Here you go. So you can set an alarm based on the stops so that you're notified prior to, like, whenever.
So you can sleep.
So you can sleep as long as you want and then hopefully get up in time so that you can make it to the bus on time. I'll go ahead and set an alarm for this one. Remind me, let's say, 10 minutes before that bus is scheduled to get there. That way I know I'll be out there by 8:14 p.m. to get my inbound to the Ferry Plaza. And you can kind of go through and, you know, it's just a great way to kind of see based on where you're specifically located. When you launch this initially, it shows you where you are right now and everything that's related to where you're standing. Obviously, I moved that to move it into San Francisco, but that could be really handy if you happen to be downtown somewhere. You're like, what are my options? I just need to get home. Pull it up. Boom. It gives you everything. And you can dive in and see, you know, what's running, what's not running right now. What things are delayed, all that kind of stuff. And
surprises are not more red on there.
No kidding, San Francisco, if you know what I mean. And yeah, advisory for Jay, use temporary stop at entrance, a little warning there on that stop. Anyways, I just like the layout of it. And it's a really nice app. And
this is a good app, and I'm surprised it wasn't in the arena yet.
Well, I'm waiting for Ron to be like, hold up. But I don't think it has been.
I don't think it was. Yeah. I assume you looked for it before you entered it in, right, Jason? That's a standard operating procedure,
totally,
right?
Totally. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Why is the Hyperloop in there?
Why not?
Is this a call to the future?
I certainly hope so.
Or does it exist? And I just missed the memo. That would be an important.
Oh, Jason.
No.
I've got bad news for you, my friend.
No, you did. No. Are you serious?
I did. I don't know if it was me, but episode, where is it?
Look, I was busy.
Oh, gosh.
I was busy. I was really busy today.
But it's an old episode. Episode 121.
121.
Yes, and it didn't win. And
Bleak is laughing in the chat room.
Well, I brought it to the arena, and I lost.
Okay.
And let's see, Iaz was on the show. We're using the old straw poll, which was back then.
Okay. So I guarantee you, it looked a lot different and it had different functionality then versus Jason, what it has now. So therefore, it's worthy of being brought back into the arena. That's my take.
Here's the thing. I'm going to back you on that because two reasons why. Because you weren't on the show.
Oh,
it was me, Gina, and Iaz. So you weren't on that episode. So you wouldn't remember. And that was literally years ago, and the app has been updated, so I'll allow it. If Flo agrees with me, I agree.
I will allow it.
Yes. Yep. Yes. So, I mean, I meant to do it. Totally. I thought it would be a good idea to bring this back because it's great. Anyways, thanks to you guys for allowing it, and thanks. And thanks to Kapil. Sorry, I'm mispronouncing your name. But the app is Transit Real-Time Transit App. I hate it when I hear that voice from you, Ron, when I'm showing off an app.
I know.
It makes my heart sink into my feet.
I didn't want to do it.
Yeah, but I'm happy you looked it up. I'd rather we know now instead of an email. All right, so that is that app. Flo, you're up next.
Yes, I'm starting it up right now. And I'm going to try and turn up the volume so you can hear it.
Oh, it sounds beautiful.
Actually, let me turn on the volume first and explain to you what's going on here. So this app is called I Love You. Get it?
Like, I Love You.
And I thought it was kind of a perfect app to bring into the arena, especially on Valentine's Day. But also because I like this app, because I like really simplistic games, and I like games that kind of help me chill out that I can just sort of play without. Like, I like puzzle games and pattern games for that reason. Anyway, so this app is all about colors. It's all about, you know, well, let me show you. Let me just show you instead of telling.
So, Hue, H-U-E.
H-U-E, like Hue light bulbs.
Right. I thought it was a Hue app when I first saw it in the list. I was like, ooh.
So every level of this app, there are 300 levels, by the way, which is kind of nice. Wow. So every level of this app requires you to move around the different color swatches and match them up so that you have a beautiful gradient that's happening in the thing.
Layout.
The layout. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And these little tiles with little dots in them, you cannot move those tiles. So you can only move what's down here in the middle. It's fairly simple. You just kind of move around colors as you see them change. When you've completed them by putting them in order,
Nice.
You go on to the next one.
Oh, it's so Valentine's-y too.
Yeah.
It's perfect for today.
And the music is, you know, really nice. Very nice, kind of like relaxing.
Soothing.
Let's see. It's really nice, relaxing music that you can only sort of hear.
Do you have a move, like a number of moves that you're required to get it in by, or you can just kind of play around with it?
It doesn't look like it, but you can take snapshots.
Oh, okay.
Remove ads, have achievements. There are achievements, I think. So I'm assuming like how quickly you solve a puzzle, like you would receive an achievement based on that sort of thing. So
nice.
It's just really cute,
pleasant.
Beautiful, just a really pleasant game. I like these little simple games too because they don't take up a lot of time or a lot of space.
Nice.
So yeah, that's I Love Hue. And what is this? Diamonds? Oh.
And you can buy diamonds for something.
Yes. I'm still getting to that part. I'm just kind of learning. I'm still learning how to play it, but I really like it.
Don't buy diamonds. You don't need any diamonds.
You don't have to. It's free. In-app purchases, or you could just play it and look at the pretty colors and listen to the pretty music.
Excellent. Yeah. I love you. Speaking of listening to pretty music, Liam, you're up next, and I actually am a big fan of this app. I've played around with it a lot. I will show it off while you talk about it.
Excellent. So my app is a white noise app called Noisly. Sounds boring, but it actually isn't. I've tried a bunch of white noise apps, and usually they struggle with either sound quality, functionality, or just the interface. But I think that this does all three pretty well. It has three pages of different kinds of sounds you can use, and you can turn them on and like make combinations. It has like train tracks and wind and flowing water and birds.
Leave it on the train tracks. I love train tracks. Oh.
So you can make whatever combination you want. It has a sleep timer. It's just like a really well done white noise app. It's pretty. It's easy to use. It has really nice sounds. My favorite combination is rain plus like the forest noise on a very low setting and then flowing water.
Okay, I'm going to get your mix here. And then the forest really low. So get tiny little tweets in there.
I love stuff like this, by the way.
And then flowing water.
It's good for productivity or falling asleep. So like both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, nice. And then I'm going to go ahead and
It's very good if you're home alone and you're scared.
Yeah.
You keep hearing bumps in the night.
This is Liam's fave. There we go. And you've got your standard like white noise sounds as well on the side. White, pink, and brown.
The box fan. What does the box fan sound like?
I love box fan noise.
Me too.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
it reminds
me of the summer because that's when we have a box fan on.
Weird ones.
Yep, that's nice. Box fan.
Oh, God. In the summers on Long Island, my parents' house didn't have air conditioning, and I built the system of box fans with one fan blowing air in and the other fan blowing air out.
We have
and
that it was in just our like, house.
And it would just be like, and then I had a third box fan right by my bed to just keep me immediately cool, and I would just fall asleep to the sound of the box fan. It was just wonderful.
So, yeah, that was our summers in Romania, too.
I'm with
box
you.
Fans.
There you go.
Yeah, I feel
the
you.
Box fans.
And, You can also, they also have a website that does the exact same thing.
Oh.
So there you
oh,
go.
Oh, wow.
And
there
it's,
you go.
It's spelled Noisly, N-O-I-S-L-I, for those of you listening. Yeah. And curious about looking it up yourself.
Nice. I didn't realize they had a site. Cool.
And it's in material design.
Of course.
Yeah, it's lovely.
As it should be.
I would expect no less from Liam, of course.
That's right, that's right. excellent. That is Noisily, N-O-I-S-L-I. And it is $1.99, I believe. $1.99 for the app.
And I have to give a shout out to Franco because he introduced me to the site. And then I found the app.
Oh.
Nice.
Cool.
Excellent. Great pick. Ron, I have your app installed. So
yes. So if we've talked about it before in the past, how the EU is very specific and sometimes annoying about their regulations and things like that. Mm-hmm. And Europe is very privacy minded and all that sort of thing, as are many people here in the States now. Well, Quant apparently is the leading search engine made in Europe, and they released an app that not only is a interface into their search engine with a unique kind of different interface in terms of for searching, but within the app, there's a whole tool set as how to live a private and secure life. And also it includes their own browser, their Liberty browser. So first off, Jason, if you can tap on the bottom left-hand corner, and you can see they make suggestions about apps that can that value your privacy, that protect you. So if you tap on the web, they suggest you install a bunch of different browsers that are more privacy friendly, or you could use their Liberty browser that comes with this. They also recommend Firefox. If you back out, you can go to security and they break down the password apps and things like that. And also they explain why, which I think is important. If you go back to the communication, you can see, or just scroll down, you can see they explain why they chose the apps they did. And they've got recommendations for communication for messaging and email, as well as data storage. So that's like very privacy friendly in that regard and kind of helpful in giving you these recommendations. But then if you tap on the bottom, the magnifying glass there, you get into their search engine, and it's just basically a Europe version of a Google, but it's not Google. And if you search for anything, try searching for Android there, Jason. What you can see is that you get back results in kind of that card-based format, but that looks slightly different. And they give you search results. You can combine them all into all results, or you can filter them by website results, news results, social networks, images, video, shopping, music. So very Google-esque, but it's just an alternative to the mighty G. And then finally, in the bottom right-hand corner, if you tap on the little LI, you get there. This is their Liberty browser. And they explain to you how the Liberty browser works. It's secure, it's protective, private, all those sort of things. And then once you accept to their terms, which is I thought was kind of funny. But there you go. It's another browser that is focused on privacy and making sure that all your stuff is secure and private and nobody is kind of spying on what you're browsing. So if you wear a tinfoil hat or these are things that are important to you, you might want to check out Quant.
Nice.
And it's free in the Google Play Store.
Excellent. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that
they have a website too.
They do.
Excellent.
I was just checking out.
Quant, Q-W-A-N-T. And that is free. Awesome stuff. So now it is time for you to place your vote. Is your favorite app of the week Transit? It's a second returning to the arena, but you know, it's been a long time. So Transit, I Love Hue, Noisily, or Quant, go to bit.ly/AAAvote305. bit.ly/AAAvote.
Brian needs help sleeping, I see.
305.
Are you okay, Brian? Thoughts keeping you up at night?
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. I'm not awake enough to even answer that. I'm so tired I am.
bit.ly/AAAvote305. Place your vote, and we'll check in on it next week. And that, as they say, is that.
That concludes our show.
Thank you very much. Liam Spradlin from Touch Lab and all sorts of other awesome things on the internet. Really appreciate you coming on. It's been too long. We got to have you back soon. Thank you for coming on tonight.
Yeah, thank you guys. It's always nice to be on.
Absolutely. So this is your chance to tell people what you're up to, what you want people to follow, you know, where you want them to follow you, all that kind of stuff.
I'm working on all kinds of stuff. I guess if I had to give one link, I would just say dadapixel.com. It's dadapixel.com. And that links out to Design Notes, which is my own podcast. It's kind of like an interview show one-on-one with different designers from different fields to talk about what they're doing and what they're excited about and what kind of insights they have from that. There's also Project Phoebe, of course, which I'm still working on. No new announcements yet, but soon. And then there's just my portfolio. You can check out all the other stuff that I'm doing.
Right on, man.
Man, I really missed the opportunity to have a material design wedding and have like, yeah.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
That would have been. Yeah.
I was just thinking, looking at Liam's page. I could have. Anyway.
There are many places you could take a material design wedding. Yes. That could have been. Too bad you didn't have an amazing wedding.
Too bad.
That, you know,
what a waste of money.
Could have been material. Could have been so much more amazing. Thank you again, Liam. Really appreciate it. Flo, what about you?
Well, I am, as you all know, on the internet at androidcentral.com, where I will be chronicling my journal with the Chromebook, my journey with the Chromebook.
In a journal that will eventually be published.
Are you journaling with the Chromebook, about the Chromebook?
I'm trying to. Yeah. And that's actually, I started writing that column today and I didn't finish it because I just don't know where to take it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where to go.
Takes time.
I'm exploring a lot. I'm learning a lot about myself this week with my Chrome OS journey. And you can also follow it at Snapchat and Twitter at Oh That Flo.
Excellent. Thank you, Flo.
Thank you.
Ron, what about you?
Cool. Yes. Same as the previous weeks. Follow me on Twitter at RonXO, where I talk about my other podcasts. Go check out iFanboy at iFanboy.com, where we talk about all things comic books. And coming up in a day or so is our podcast about the Lego Batman movie, which was a lot of fun. And we end up going about 40 minutes into meta commentary and very deep analysis of the Lego Batman movie. So there you go. And also check out my newest podcast, Damn Fine Podcast, at damnfinepodcast.com, where me and Tom Merritt are revisiting and rewatching Twin Peaks. And we've got some great guests coming up this month. Really excited as we get closer to May for the new season of Twin Peaks. So check out damnfinepodcast.com.
Excellent. Lego Batman.
Okay, I'm good. It's, okay. On the most part, it's good. It doesn't have the same joie de vivre that the Lego movie had. Right. You know, like the Lego movie was really something special and unique. And Lego Batman is like a one note joke that happens a lot, but it's very funny. And if you're into movies and pop culture and things like that, you'll enjoy a lot of the jokes. But it's like a 1.5 note joke.
Okay. So. Yeah, the first one, that was definitely a combination of good things that came together and you didn't expect.
But I will say, in the Old Man Diaries, I walked out of it exhausted because it's just like a visual assault.
Oh.
And you're laughing at one joke and you've missed three other ones. So it goes very fast.
Oh, I hate it when that happens. Oh, it's one of those movies. They put a lot of stuff in it, I bet, because kids are going to watch that movie over and over again when it comes out. And so they're like,
well, This is what we discuss in the podcast, is that it's a fine balance between all the kids that want bright, flashy, fast, go, 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 and then the fat 40-year-old nerds like my friends who really want deep comic book reference movies. And this has got so many Easter eggs and like things I would never thought I would see in a movie. But sure enough, they're there. So yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Thanks, Ron. Brian.
Oh, me?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jason.
What do you know? You have a light and a camera.
Look at that guy.
Might
that
have thought guy. That we'd throw to you.
Well, I wanted the camera, the light, just so I could say we did the collaboration. It's out on that show that I work on occasionally.
Oh, right. You guys did a collab. We did a sesh.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Is it on YouTube?
Yeah, it is on YouTube, but you can find it at twit.tv/KH also. So
it's about video games and retro pies.
Yeah,
basically.
It was a lot of fun. And then I'm gonna have like a follow up where I'm gonna 3D print a case because you don't need to bother getting the NES Classic. You could just build a pie. We just did that. Oh, did you?
Yeah, 3D print a console for the Raspberry Pi. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've got an even better NES Classic than the NES Classic when you do that.
Ours looks Super Nintendo-y.
Nice. Well, great. All right. Then don't watch Know How then. Just go see what Flo did.
No. Go watch Know How. Sorry. It's interesting. I wanted to bond with you, Brian. I'm trying to bond with you.
I'm just messing with you, Flo. But otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter at @crank_hippo.
Awesome. Thanks as always, Brian. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. YellowGoldMusic.com for music someday. And about.me/JasonHowell for ways to follow me online if you choose to do so. But that is it for this week. We really appreciate you coming back week after week for All About Android. Leave us a voicemail. We never get them from you, but please do. 347-SHOW-AAA. Leave us a video mail. Sometimes we get those from you.
And we love
them. Haven't in a while, and we love them. AAA@twit.tv. Just email that into us. Twitter, we are @AndroidShow. We have a subreddit, which is twitaaa.reddit.com for story suggestions. Find show notes and past episodes at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find our episodes on YouTube, iTunes, Pocket Cast, all over the map. And you can catch us live every Tuesday starting around 5:30 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. That is it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.